countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
Yes, indeed. Good morning and welcome to the Butterfield Estate. As you say, home to this year's big Tullamore show. This morning, I'm standing on the site where final preparations all round me are being made for tomorrow's Tullamore show, with the showpiece being the FBD National Livestock Show. Now, as well as the competition, there are displays and demonstrations, 700 trade and machinery stands, there's lots of cattle here, and there's something for everyone, and plenty to entertain the expected 60,000 visitors that the organisers hope will attend. Now, there are clouds on the horizon here in County Offaly. The weather has been unsettled and the beef protests are worrying for farmers across the country as well. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on the programme. But first, for many pedigree cattle and sheep owners, this is the highlight of the year. You can forget about your All-Irelands. You can forget about the Rugby World Cup. And dare I say it, even in these parts, Sean Lowry, you can forget about golf majors, because bringing a prize animal to the Tullamore show in search of a winning rosette is where it's at. This week, I travelled to the neighbouring county of County Laois to meet one such farmer who's counting down the hours to tomorrow's show.
So this is a double grow dryer.
Right.
Not a lot of people have a double grow dryer.
Garrett Behan is a busy man this week.
I'd say we'll get up at 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
Now, I'm close to Tullamore. I'm only there's people travelling from Donegal and the bottom of Cork and Kerry to it. I'm close to about the number of cattle. I was just sitting down last night going through, I have two lorries and two trailer loads going over to it, so sitting down trying to put a plan together as in what's going on what lorry and what's going on what trailer, that they can all fit in.
From his farm in Ballyfin, County Laois, he will bring over 20 show cattle the relatively short journey to Tullamore tomorrow.
We'll normally give them a bit of a wash here. I'll be washing here for 2 days now. I'll get a bit of clipping to do in the next couple of days on the mall, and wash here Friday, Saturday, bed early,
right,
up early.
Showing pedigree cattle is a passion for Gareth, and it's paid off handsomely, with many titles won here in Tullamore and at other shows around the country, not to mention across the world. Is the showing side of the business, is that your hobby? Is that your sport?
My golf.
Your golf for your...
I prefer hurling. but it would be. It would be. It was the marketing tool for our breed.
Gareth farms along with his father and his wife, Lindsay.
Yeah, it's a family farm. I'm a second or third generation on the farm. We were originally a dairy farm. In 2001, we would have got into suckler. Well, we would have had suckler since 89. I'm 30 years in pedigree sucklers this year. In 2001, we made the decision that both couldn't work, so we couldn't expand milk because of quotas that time, so we got into, we expanded the suckler herd. The cattle are bred for breeding purposes. The females will go on for producing in other herds. The bulls themselves would be going on as stock bulls in the commercial herds and in pedigree herds or AI.
So there's a lot of money involved. I mean, how much can, you know, the best pedigree bulls actually cost somebody like you?
It depends on the bull. If you're a lucky sale, you could get away lucky enough. There's not a big customer there to buy you, but I suppose I would have bought the last couple of bulls privately and it would have cost five figure sums in sterling. The last bull, I bought him in sterling in the Perth bull sales, as they were known, and he cost me 22,000 in sterling. So they say you should always buy a bull when you don't want a bull. I would have bought T-Rex, Banmi T-Rex from David Jones in Wales in the sterling bull sales when the conversion rate wasn't as good in 2008. He would have been one of the best bulls that I would have bred me all my daughters of all my main cows at the moment. He cost me 8.5 sterling at the time, but again, he was home. There was very little change, over 15,000. Possibly the cheapest bull I ever bought.
So what exactly is involved in preparing his cattle for showing at an event as big and prestigious as the Tullamore Show?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's apart from feeding, it's hair. The hair and the coats on them and clipping them and grooming them and putting soap on them and shaving foam on them and sprays, and there's a number of different things people use for them. I mainly use soap here myself. But you'd be washing them, blow drying them. You'd be clipping them. And you're just trying to make them softer and easier looking to look at, you know, present them as best they can do. It's the same, listen, it's the same as going to a nightclub. Simple as going to a nightclub. Listen, you go, look, judging a cattle, you go for a good head, same as you would in a nightclub. I'm comparing this to judging in females, but good legs and feet, a nice body, and you leave the rest to your imagination. You know, I've used that one a good time, and cattle is no different. Like, if you go in your work clothes to a nightclub, you won't be looked at too quick. You know, if you go dressed up, you look totally different. And the Tullamore show is no different. We'll be all wearing shorts and ties. We'll be presenting ourselves properly as well.
And in terms of feeding them as well, you don't want them to be scuttering all over the place either.
No. I tend to take them all off feed in the 3 or 4 days behind it. I just want hay and dry them up a bit. You know, just it makes, and you have that number of cattle there, you can't be going around looking at them, seeing if they are they clean or dry. Like, you know, you need to have them right that day.
Believe it or not, Garrett even has a Miss World among his crop.
Listen, I'm lucky enough, I suppose, I have a cow here, Darling Eyes. She's the first cow or animal ever from Europe in the breed to win it. So it's nice to win that, and then getting a trip to Canada in November out of it as well. So just pick up her sash and a big buckle. So
that cow we're looking at over there is Miss World?
Yeah, that's Darling Eyes, Miss World, yeah.
Well, can you describe her for us then?
Well, she's not small anyway, right? She's touching nearly a ton and a half weight. She's a big square cow, she walks well. She's a great top on her. She's a super calf. Her daughter is next door to us here behind us. She's 2 or 3 Nashes won, and she's never been beaten as well. So she's just a big, powerful cow, and she's producing a great calf.
But out of all the awards and rosettes won by Gareth over the years, there's one that'll never be beaten.
Yeah, I suppose I met Lindsay through Show and Cattle, my wife. We met in Tullamore, and oh God, I'd be shot not knowing the year, but it was 2002 or 2003 or 2004, somewhere around there. I was first and she was second, and I don't know if it's still the first and second that way, but we met that way through Sean Cattle, and she's from Bandon, so she's 140 miles away from me, and we've met together and we got married 11 years ago. So her parents now are very good. They'll take the 2 boys off us now for the weekend. She'll go down with them during the week, and she'll be home here, and she'll be outside with me on Saturday getting them ready, and the same Sunday morning she'll be up as quick as we will get them ready. Now, this will be her first show. She ain't does Tullamore show anymore because of my 2 boys, she'll be walking as many cattle on Sunday now, and she'll be fair sore after, because she hasn't done it this year. I'm used to it, she's not. And them cattle, like she walks all the cattle at the sales and shows, comes them with me, and she walks them all in the sales rings. But she doesn't be with the cattle. She'd be out with the cattle, but she wouldn't be walking them here at home anymore. She just hasn't got time, you know.
Right. All right. Well, Gareth, the very best of luck, and thanks very much for taking time to talk to us this busy week for you.
No problem. Thank you very much, Michael.
And Gareth Behan will join competitors with their cattle from all corners of the country coming here to the Tullamore show tomorrow. In fact, there's actually some of the dairy farmers with their cows already here. Now, we're already on site as well, and final preparations are being made for the pinnacle of summer shows in Ireland, which is attended by farmers and non-farmers and families every year since it began about 30 years ago or so. One name that's synonymous with the Tullamore show is Fida Kinnearney, who is the driving force putting everything together here, and she's with me. Good morning, Frida. You've been sleeping here for the last few weeks, I'd say, have you?
Indeed I have, but while I know I acknowledge the credits you give me there, but there's a team involved in this. There's no one person involved. Or
I don't think it will go ahead without you now, Frida.
Oh, it surely would.
But you're the driving force behind it.
Well, I am the operations manager, so I suppose right. From that role, and the secretary then as well. So I suppose from the role that I have, you know, yeah. I have a lot of involvement with all the people that are involved in it and that, but they're a great team, and just great camaraderie, as you can see, like what has been turning out here today and the event that we're expecting here tomorrow with the trongs and the finishing touches being going to be put this evening, and that maybe the flower pots put out here and there and things like that. But
but how much work goes into it? Now, there's people listening to us getting up all over the country this morning. A lot of them have been to the Tullamore show, a lot of them will be coming here tomorrow bringing their families, but a lot of people don't know what it is. How would you explain it to an alien?
Well, how big it is.
I suppose the best advice is that you have to see it to believe it.
Right.
So get yourself here tomorrow and you will see it on the ground and that. But it's a huge operation to put together.
Yeah.
It actually starts, we will have our first meeting, we'll say, towards next year, next Wednesday night.
Really?
Where we actually get together. But we do have a rule at that, that it's only the positive that's acknowledged and accredited, because after the work that goes in, you just have to take time out and just acknowledge the success it has been, and thank God it has always has been a great success.
So you're going to have 60,000 or thereabouts here tomorrow. We gave all the figures earlier on, but how big is the site here, Frieda?
The site, the showgrounds itself actually is 250 acres, but then we would have car parking facilities and that, so and neighbours and that, we would have some parking facilities for all those. So as I say, the great team, the great camaraderie, and that. So in total, you're talking about 500 acres.
500, that's a lot.
500 acres, yes.
And we're just south of Tullamore for people that are coming in. It's great that the town is bypassed, you know, if people are coming from the north parts of the country.
Yeah, we've worked very closely with the Gardaí, and the traffic plan that we have in place, which is very similar to other years, is working hugely successful. The comments and the feedback we're always getting is how freely the traffic flowed, both getting in and getting out and getting away. And I mean, that is a huge credit to the plan that the Gardaí, in cooperation of course with ourselves, has put in place, and that, and and with the help of God, with all those thousands coming tomorrow, it will be another great
Now you mentioned that, I was going to say to you, you're a religious woman, you said with the help of God. I'd say you're praying hard that those clouds will pass over.
I will never deny that, David, because we can only do so much down here, and I leave it in God's hands then after that. So,
because you were rained off a couple of years, that must have been so disappointing.
Oh.
To arrange something for a year and then to say we have to call it off.
And not only that, but in the second year, a complete repeat of that on the Saturday.
What was it, 07, 08, around that time?
Yeah, 07 and 08, yes. Yeah. And we would have been in Charleville Estate then. And I know I have, we'll say, mentioned to myself at that stage, I got a taste of what maybe suffering from depression could be like, because it was horrendous. But thank God, the support of the people and the you know, you had young people that maybe would have entered their cake of bread and stuff, and they're telling you, I don't want my entry fees back, you know, and stuff like that, had to kind of boost your morale and put you, go, you know, on the track with enthusiasm again.
Well, we're in another estate now, and it's been called the Butterfield Estate. Sounds very grand, but it's named in honour of the man sitting beside me here, Johnny Butterfield. How are you, Johnny?
Not about them, man.
You're well known in these parts. You bought this farm, your daughter and son-in-law now farm it. You're gracefully retired.
And Damien, you'd like to know, he's a heaven man.
Oh, that's great. No better. She did well there, so
she
didn't
did,
she?
Surely.
Huh?
And I tell you this much, they're better farmers than I ever was anyway.
That's great praise anyway. Yeah. But you're retired, but you were farming here. So tell us about the farm here. There's a lot of history to this place, Johnny.
Yeah, actually there's five farms in the one here now, but this was a monastery area here. We had great monasteries in Rahan, Lainelli and Durrow. And of course the Normans, when they arrived here, they plundered all the great monasteries, and they were preparing to launch a big plunder on the monasteries I've just mentioned there. But the people of the local area here, this is called the old area Firkal, which went from Kilbeggan roughly to Burr, and from Clonisleigh to Tara then, from east to west.
Yeah.
And the people said, look, this will have to stop. So they engaged them, and they actually defeated them on the grounds here twice.
Right.
Which was quite unusual. And in recent years, when we were claiming and cultivating the land here, we discovered some of the old artefacts from the battle that actually took place about 800 years ago.
So it's a site of serious archaeological note as well.
Well, archaeological anyway, and some of the artefacts are actually in the museum. They're probably in the corner somewhere that no one ever saw, but we have some of them here ourselves that we retain.
Have you got any of them there? I saw you come around with a plastic bag earlier on with some dangerous looking implements. Were they discovered here?
I have to keep my eye on you in case you're turning me, but one of them's an old pike, a primitive pike.
Right.
And one of the nicest and probably the most interesting one is a golden crucifix. Now, the Normans hadn't that, but they probably plundered it from some of the monasteries that they used to bring the plunder with them as they travelled.
Yeah.
But when we're defeated, they had to leave it all behind, which left a little bit of, like, we're talking about gold and silver and art and literature that was priceless, really.
Yeah.
And they left it behind here, and some of that was around this area for a long, long time afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So so you bought the land here, and it's pasture land, so you're cattle and sheep on this, was it? And it's still a working farm.
This was a mixed farm area at one time. And I think the mixed farming thing was the best system of farming there was, because when I started farming 40 or 50 years ago, an economic holding was 40 acres. Now you need a job at 100 acres to make a living.
Yeah.
And all this Eurocrats and bureaucrats that have really destroyed agriculture, they brought in 160 regulations associated with agriculture. And I was in England with my wife there last year, and we discovered that the English farmers were totally against Europe. And I met them at a had a meeting there in the hotel where we stayed, and they said one of the reasons why they were so opposed to Europe is that they were being told to do things that they knew in their heart and soul wasn't right for farming, it wasn't right for the world, really.
Johnny, before I let you go, you believe that the Tullamore Show is, you know, it's a very, very... What does it mean to you, and why do you think it's such an important event?
Well, I'm always encouraged when I come down to Tullamore Show, because here you have the best crops and stock in the world, produced by the best people in the world. And it infuriates me to say that people in Europe and experts of all descriptions say we should reduce our production when half the world is dying with hunger. It just doesn't. Unless we're cutting down rainforests, the aviation industry is probably burning up more fossil fuel than all the farmers in Ireland. It doesn't stand to reason at all. And the last thing I want to say, Damien, is that, like, if you want a day's fun and adventure, and you want to meet the real treasure of this country, the Plain People of Ireland, come to Tullamore Show. Right. It's quite unique.
All right. Well, Johnny, and you'll be here. Will you stay with us? Because I believe you're going to play a bit of music for us later on, are you? And we have a famous guest that's going to sing with you as well.
The famous Paddy Delaney is to sing, and I'll try and put him out as best I can.
Right, we'll stay there. And Freddie, will you stay here as well? But there's a baking competition tomorrow. There's lots, so many things happen. 125 different classes in baking and desserts and all of that. And I'm delighted to welcome here Pauline Kilmartin locally. Hello, Pauline, how are you?
Hi, Damien.
You'll be here tomorrow with your goods.
I will indeed.
What's your typical Saturday like?
Well, we do a farmer's market every Saturday in Kilcormac, and we do get up early, kind of get everything prepared the night before, just put it into the bowls, start mixing it, and into the ovens, and a lot of heat and around the area. But
so you're a mother of six, and Aideen's here with you. Hello, Aideen.
Well,
how are you? Very good. I know it's a big week for you. The Leaving Cert results Tuesday, but sure.
Eventful week.
And life will only begin after that. And you're here. You're competing tomorrow as well with your mum.
Yeah, yeah. For the first time, I've never competed before, and Ma this year encouraged me to compete. A good few entries I have.
Great.
I think I've entered about six times. Well, so
what have you entered? Your speciality?
God, probably the bread, because Ma showed me how to make hers. So, I'm entered in the bread and the youth championships for Dodlums, and just kind of cakes and stuff after that. Really.
And Pauline, you entered here many years ago just out of the fun of it, and you won.
I did, actually.
And that has given you the inspiration to obviously bake for the farmers market every Saturday.
Indeed. Yes, I think it was 1999. I'm nearly sure it was, and this. Tullamore Show, the show book came in through the post.
Yeah.
And I just entered a rich fruit cake. I didn't think much of it, and I put it in, and I'll never forget it. I came third, and I won £50.
Well, that was a lot of money then.
It was fierce money, you know.
So the Tullamore was the inspiration for you to continue baking. And
absolutely.
You're here again tomorrow. Will you be nervous? Is this do you feel like the Dublin and Mayo players this evening now coming here tomorrow?
Because, you know, when you come here, you know, you think you have good quality stuff. And then when you see your neighbours, what they're bringing in, God, the effort is huge, is brilliant.
Well, the very best of luck, and you'll be up there with the crafts, and there will be a competition, and you'll have some of your bread, and you've brought some of it in here as well. And I want to thank you very much, Paul. And you haven't too far. You're only out in Kilcormac, you'll be flying the Offaly flag. And Aideen, the very best of luck to you on Tuesday, all right?
Thanks very much.
And great to see you, and we'll chat to you later on. Stay with us, indeed, for the rest of the programme. OK, we're live here in Tullamore.
Tomorrow it hosts a national invention competition with competitors in five different categories, and student categories too, because the four judges need time and space days to examine each invention. So the judging will be happening today, starting in less than 2 hours, so that the inventors are free to chat to the public when the show opens on Sunday. And I'm delighted to say that one of them is here with me, Seamus Drum, from Clonadu, is it? You're in Gieshill.
Clonacadu, Gieshill County Offaly.
Very good. And what is your invention, Seamus? You're a bit of an inventor then.
Well, I've had a few tries at it. Basically, this particular one is a rehash of an old one I had, which is chopping timber to shear the timber rather than cut it with a saw.
Right. So, and when did you come up with that idea? Or how did you come up with it?
Well, I came up with it in about 2011 because I realised the volume of work that was required and the amount of chainsaw use that was required to cut firewood was an enormous amount. So now
and that's the generator going in the background there. So just show me what it does. It's like a guillotine, isn't it?
Yes, it is a guillotine as such.
Watch your hands there. So Seamus has a big log now and you're sticking it into the side here of the machine, which is on roller wheels, and it just chops it.
It just chops it now and it's just going through the motion.
Okay, so that saves you the work of a chainsaw.
It saves you the work of a chainsaw, but also the vibration going through you.
Right.
So you if you work a chainsaw for a number of hours, you'll feel the pressure on your because you'll get tingling sensations in you.
And is there much of a market for this now, Seamus?
Well, the market is that I really don't know, because at the end of the day, you take your chance. Yeah. I'm looking for someone to help me with the. The marketing and the
you need Dragon's Den, don't you?
Well, I need someone like that, yes. But I need someone who understands, say, the nature of what we're trying to do here. You know.
Yeah. And they say, I suppose, that invention. What's the phrase we were coming up with earlier on? The mother of invention. Necessity is the mother of invention. Was that the case with you?
It is indeed, yes. Yeah. If you don't want to work a chainsaw for hours and hours on end, and you want to do something on your own that you don't have to involve somebody else, well, then this is the requirement, you know.
Okay, Rodney, you're in charge of the inventions here. Yes. How are you?
I'm very good. Very excited.
Are all inventors mad?
Yes, I suppose we're all mad, I suppose, when you look at it in different ways, I suppose. But no, they're a unique type of people, and they'll come along. Every year we have, and it's getting more. We have over 30 this year, and they'll come along, and whatever they invent will be judged. But winning isn't a priority to them at all. They love to be here, and they mix and talk and chat with one another, and it's more or less an occasion. And they'll go around, and they'll take ideas from one another. And I honestly think that they like one another's company because they're like-minded people, you know.
Yeah.
And as you said with that saying, you know, we need them, and it's amazing what they can bring to the marketplace, you know.
All right, okay. Well, listen, Rodney, you go off and get your judges together. Seamus, the very best of luck to you. Thanks very much, Seamus Drum. And you'll be here tomorrow. People can come along and they can see your invention. So that's Seamus Drum there from out in Gieshill. Now, we're moving away from Tullamore for the moment because there have been overnight developments regarding the nationwide beef protests. We'll hear about that presently. But first, here's a little look back at what has been a very divisive week between the farmers and the factories.
We stood up for ourselves at last. We're not going to be bullied around anymore by the factories and the supermarkets telling us, dictating to us how we should or should not earn a living.
We'll sit it out, make no mistake about it. We will sit this out. There's no giving in, not one inch.
Meat Industry Ireland said this evening processors have endeavoured to maintain business continuity in the face of ongoing protests, intimidation and blockades of factory operations around the country by beef plan.
We need to see a lifting of the protests and a normal processing activity, and businesses being allowed to get back up and function.
The Irish Independent says the beef industry has been plunged into a deep crisis. The paper says major beef processors have written to the beef plan movement, warning it has just hours to stand down or face immediate legal action.
We have called on Meat Industry Ireland to get down off their high horse and enter into negotiations, enter into talks with the farmers without any preconditions.
Meat Industry Ireland, the body representing processors, has said plant owners are to take legal action to end ongoing protests over beef prices that have led to a slowdown in production and temporary staff layoffs.
However, the beef plan members say they will not enter talks that have preconditions.
I would say it is time now to move from protests, which has raised awareness, to roundtable discussions to deliver outcomes.
Snapshot there from the airwaves during the week of different views of the various stakeholders caught up in the beef plan movement factory protests across the country. With me now, Adam Woods, who's beef specialist with the Irish Farmers Journal. You've been to a number of protests this week, but Adam, there's been developments overnight.
Yeah, there has, Damien. I suppose as a result of an intervention by the Minister for Agriculture, Michael Creed, the MII has agreed to drop legal proceedings. And
Meat Industry Ireland, which represents the factory.
Yeah, and Beef Plan have agreed to cease protests at the gates. That's pending talks on Monday, and depending on how those talks go on Monday, we'll see how that goes out.
And how has that been received by farmers? Because I do understand that there are still some protests happening as we speak at some of the plants.
Yeah, speaking to farmers on the ground, it's mixed. It's a mixed reaction. Some farmers think they should still maintain a presence at factories. I know I called into Ballygem's off this morning in Liffey Meats. There is still a farmer presence there. I called into Kilbeggan. There is no farmer presence in Kilbeggan. I know Bandon there's a presence. Kildare there's a presence. At League there's a presence. In Care there's no farmers there. So it's mixed across the country.
Now, will you remind us, what are farmers actually looking for here? What prompted the protests?
Yeah, I guess the beef plan movement, I suppose, was started last October. It's a result of the manifestation of the level of despair that exists there in the suckler sector. And farmers feel that they're really being left to wither on the vine, I suppose. They're really passionate about the sector, but they're angered as well the way, I suppose, successive governments and stakeholders have maybe failed to look at the challenges that exist within the sector. Last week's protest was a result of beef prices falling to £3.40 a kilo, but really, in reality, it's a lot more than that. Beef farmers feel they're getting it from every angle. It's Brazilian beef coming into Europe, climate change, and really meat processors maybe not engaging properly on specs, and really the level of transparency there that exists within the beef industry. Once you sell your animal, we've no idea what happens after
that. And they've come up, the beef plan have come up with this table where they show that they're only getting 20 cents out of every euro that you and I spend on our Sunday roast.
Yeah, I guess that's debatable, but I suppose the problem is we don't know.
Yeah.
There's a very, we'll say, low level of transparency within beef systems as to what level of profit processors are making, what level of profit retailers are making. We know the level of profit that beef farmers are making, and that's very, very low.
What about other people that, you know, were collateral damage in this? Factory workers, vets, truck drivers, and indeed farmers that needed to get their cattle killed this week because they were hitting the 30-month mark, or they just needed the money, the cash, to pay bills.
I guess it's having an impact at factory gates. Last week's kill was reduced by close to 6,000 head. This week's kill will be up to maybe reducing by 18,000-20,000 head. So really, it's starting to impact fresh sales into the UK, and we know there are a number of factories going to resume slaughtering this morning. I guess that's a day, maybe 2 days. It's not going to pull back 14 days less slaughtering. But there have been some notices, we'll say, issued to workers in factories that their jobs are on sort of protective notice.
Right. So these talks are going to happen on Monday. The Minister for Agriculture, who himself was coming under pressure from some elements within the protests, and I suppose we could talk about that another day. It's not so sure what he can actually do in terms of going in and telling meat factories you've got to up your prices. I don't think a minister can do that, can he?
Yeah, he has said that he has very little control over that. I suppose he can act as a mediator between the two parties, between Meat Industry Ireland and the beef plan movement. I guess it's positive to see people maybe sitting down and talking. All these people are going to have to work together in the future. We'll say farmers are going to have to sell their cattle, processors are going to have to buy their cattle. So yeah, it's positive to see them sitting down and talking to each other.
And he said that he's going to appoint an independent chairman. Any idea who that might be? Or
yeah, no, so we don't know as of yet who that independent chairman is. I guess Beef Plan have 13 demands there. I'm not too sure those 13 demands are going to be, you know, solved on Monday, but maybe we'll say there will be a plan put in place as to how we can resolve issues around the whole beef industry. The beef industry is crying out for a strategy, for a long-term plan for farmers as to how farmers can basically stay in business.
Right, so it's about a little bit more than just price. There's a number of other elements to the beef plan which they need addressed. And factories and farmers, they've been fighting for years and years. There's a lot of distrust there, and whether or not this meeting of minds next week will make a difference or not, time will tell. But in the meantime, the hope is, from the minister's perspective, is that there will be no threat of legal action by the meat processors, and at the same time that there will be no protests outside factories and that kill can resume on Monday morning. Is that it?
That's it. Tensions escalated during the week and both parties have agreed to stand down. I suppose MIA, as I said, the legal action to stand down, and the beef plan have agreed to stand down their protests at the factory gates.
All right. Well, we'll await developments. It's a rolling story, and Adam Woods of the Farmers Journal, thank you very much indeed for bringing us that up-to-date news. The protests have been suspended pending talks between both sides with an independent chairman, and that will be happening on Monday. Now, tomorrow at the Tullamore Show, Eamon Egan from the Teagasc Roscommon branch will be giving a demonstration in training a sheepdog. Sheepdog demos and sheepdog trials are very much part and parcel of many agricultural shows every summer, and it's a pastime which has many passionate followers. Earlier this week, Suzanne Campbell went to the Blessington sheepdog trials, where she saw sheepdogs in competition in advance of next week's national sheepdog trials in County Down.
It's all your fault.
I was here first man this morning.
I don't care when you were here, but it's your fault. It doesn't matter what time you were
I know
here.
It's my fault all day. But...
These sheepdog men are a feisty bunch. No one gets away without a slagging, but they're also pretty competitive. Today's trial outside Blessington is organised by Wicklow farmers Winston Pearce and Sean Healy.
Thanks very much, Sean. It's great to be here. Come here, is there a list out around from there?
There's no list.
Well, I have to say, Sean Healy done the preparation for me this year because I wasn't available yesterday. Brother of mine, Derek, down the bottom of the field, and Gary Ball just gives us a hand for the day. Set up the course the day before. Get it in order and make sure everything's right then for the morning of it.
And how many competitors would you have throughout the day?
Anywhere between 50 and 70 dogs.
Wow.
You know, normally speaking, 50 or 70 dogs would run at most of these open trials, you know.
And this is part of a calendar of trials in this area.
Yes, this is a well-known trial. Sean Healy here beside me would be running this trial for over 30 years. It's one of many trials run in Leinster over the course of 12 months.
And are you sheep farming yourself?
I am sheep farming, yeah.
And does this fit in well with the farming? Because obviously you're busy. You can't run and train your dogs all the time. But are they working for you as well at home?
Yeah, mine would be all working dogs. Sean's would be working dogs. And some men is just does trialing. But for the like of us, yeah, we're sheep farmers and we would be walking the dogs on flocks of sheep all the time. Takes a long time to train them. There's people, I do train odd dogs for people that ask me how long does it take me to train them. Well, I do say it takes me 5 or 6 weeks to get him started, but it honestly takes a year to get him trained. You get him sitting, get his right and left on him, but after that, it's training then after that.
So what happened there? He's retired, has he?
Yes, he's ripped. He caught the sheep.
And what does that mean?
Disqualified.
Oh, really? Yes. Okay. Today's judge, Michael Ryan from Tipperary, is sitting in his Jeep scrutinising proceedings.
No, he had a contrary sheep there.
I saw that, yeah.
Yes, she was backing away. But wasn't her he caught, it was a different one he caught. So I had no alternative to disqualifying.
Now, you're judging here today.
That's right.
What are you looking for? Nice straight lines?
Good straight lines, yes. Good job. There'd be very few points off if you do a good job.
And what's the total number of points?
100.
And is that like 10 sections or how is it divided up?
Outrun 20.
Okay.
Lift 10, 20 for fetch, 30 for drive, 10 for shed and 10 for pen.
Do you have any leniency if the group of sheep are particularly difficult?
Well, sure, that depends on the handler, how he can handle the sheep, how he reads the sheep. The men must be able to read the sheep as well as work the dog. Paddy, are you not running?
It's a really young dog.
Oh, young dog. Oh, you're just giving him a run, okay. Top score today is 95 pints so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
And who has that?
That man out there in front of you.
Oh, really?
Yes. So,
and is he just giving the dog a run now?
He's just giving that young dog a run, yes. That's right.
95, wow.
Yeah.
And then will he go towards national competitions?
He'll be running that dog in the national, anyhow. I suppose it'll be either Thursday, Friday or Saturday, the week after this, yeah.
And it's a nice scene of people, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's what it's all about. But, of course, everybody likes to win. And the judge is the most popular man at the end of the day.
Do you sometimes get people complaining about their marks?
They're not supposed to, but some of them do, but they're not supposed to complain. Some guys think they should have got a few more points than what they got.
And is your decision final? Or
my decision is final, yes.
Oh, I'd say you're very unpopular some days.
Well, sure. Somebody has to do it and somebody has to make a decision and that's it. That's the thing. That's the thing.
Oh, God. You can't get Muhammad to the mountain. We'll have to bring the mountain to Muhammad.
That's it. Sean Healy is bringing me up the hill to meet another well-known dog man and judge, Andy Hello. Corrigan.
Hi, you're Andy.
Yeah, how are you?
Nice to meet you. Are you farming around here?
Bottinglass.
Are you competing today?
Yeah, we have one dog here today, yeah.
Are we good at dog handling in Ireland?
The top men are among the best and the lower among the worst. The top flight are, they're as good as any. Anywhere in the world, so they're able to make the final at international most years. Then there's people out of 30 years and they're not one bit better today than they were 30 years ago. And some people, it's like every sport, some people take to it and some don't.
Is it the more time you put into it, the better it's going to work out for you, or that's not always the case?
No. Some people have it and some people haven't. It's as simple as that. You have to understand the dog and you have to understand the manners of the sheep. And you'll see some people there and then put in a good show every day, and you see some people and they just don't. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. it.
And I mean, looking at this now, there's a sheep standing off with that dog, isn't it? It's not playing ball. You can be bad luck as well.
Yeah, well, those are heavy, big heavy cross by Joes, and they don't travel as well as a lighter one would. And it's a big course, you know, so it's just... You'll see there yourself observing it there. Any of the dogs are coming sharp and the sheep are come a bit fast, they're gone.
So the type of sheep have a lot of bearing on it as well?
Yeah, you need lively, mountain-type sheep or lighter sheep. Those are big, heavy Joes, heavy pasture Joes. They're grand, but... If the dog keeps off them, if the dog, put it this way, the dogs are found out very quick with them.
Mm-hmm. Eamon Connell from Westmeath is having an okay run. He didn't get his sheep into the pen before the 9 minute time limit, though. Now, watched your run there, how'd it go?
Not too bad.
You went over the time, is that a big problem?
Well, it is a big problem. You lose 10 points for not getting your pen, so that would put you back quite a lot, you know.
And that dog that you had out, is that you finished for the day then?
No, I have one more.
And do you hope it'll be better or...?
Like, you usually keep your best dog to last, but sometimes it doesn't turn out to be your best dog.
It's all very unpredictable,
but you would be last. A lot depends on the sheep, you know. If you get good sheep, you can do something, but if you get a difficult sheep, it can ruin your whole run, you know.
I mean, you could go to the top, I'd imagine, and have terrible bad luck on the day.
Luck is a huge part. You'll see people there with just one sheep heading off and going where it likes, and you cannot do nothing with that. That's a big problem, Busher. We learn to live with all those things, you know. It gets easier as you get older.
It does indeed, in all walks of life. That's Suzanne Campbell there at the Sheepdog Trials in Wicklow. Well, I'm joined by two great Offaly legends of sport here in the RT Roadcaster here at the Tullamore Show. Of course, Offaly synonymous with sport. We got a gentle reminder of that only 3 weeks ago. Sean Lowry, how are you?
Great, never better, Damien.
It's been some few weeks for the Lowry family, hasn't it?
Yeah, sure, it's surreal. It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
And
he's going well again. We heard in the sports news earlier.
At the FedEx now, but sure, he's dining at the top table now.
He sure is.
You know, he can
there's
go
a few bob to be won there, isn't there?
Yeah, but sure, money is not everything.
No, it's not.
When you have it, I suppose, it's not everything.
Yeah, well, for the benefit of our listeners, I'm talking to the great Sean Lowry, one of the three Lowry brothers on the famous Offaly 1982 team and uncle of Shane Lowry. Was it you that got him into golf? Are you responsible?
I wouldn't think so. He started playing all right. He said that the first time he picked up a golf club was in Cross Malina, where I was.
Yeah.
I had golf clubs that time, but he was very small.
What age was he when he first struck a ball, would you say?
He was probably six or seven around there, okay. But he started playing pitch and putt then.
Right.
He didn't really take it up seriously until he was 12 or 13, I think.
Okay.
So he was probably a late starter, but he was a great man for he had so much talent and he was so different. I mean, I remember playing with him the first time in a classic in Moat, and he just opened my eyes. I remember ringing Brendan afterwards and I said, there's something special about this. Like, he only had a couple of clubs in the bag and he was level par after 8 holes or something, you know, and like he just had that magic and I often said that, but he also trained.
And was Brendan his father, was he a good golfer?
He was, yeah. Brendan still is a good golfer. Yeah, Brendan plays off 9, I think.
And yourself?
No, I'm not a good golfer. I'd be middling.
What are you playing?
I played off 10 at one stage.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
I won't say
now.
What I am now. I'm playing off 18 now.
It was in the family anyway in that regard.
And well, I don't know what the golf thing might be in the family, but I'd imagine that the Scanlons are a very sporty family as well. Yeah. Bridgie's family are very sporty. But I think probably what he has from the Lowrys, maybe the bit of a gene, is that he doesn't mind. He's very good on the big day.
Mm.
You know, I think his Brendan now, Shane's father, he could play in county finals and as a marked man. He won 9 county finals or something.
With Forban.
And he was a marked man every day he went out, but still he scored 1-3 or 1-4. You know, he always kept it for the big day, and the big day didn't matter to him.
Yeah.
And I was the same. I never bothered. Croke Park didn't mean... playing in Croke Park never bothered me much.
Right. You know, weren't fazed by...
So I'd imagine he got that little bit maybe from the Lowry's, but he also practised so hard. I mean, I often do tell young fellas, even about football or whatever, that if you're a good footballer, you're about halfway there. You have to...
Put in the work.
Talent is only halfway there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was the same, but he loved it, which helps.
Yeah. You know, well, I'm also joined here by, as I said, another... I think the two of you were actually inducted into the Offaly Hall of Fame, sports-wise, the same year. Pat Delaney from the 1981 historic Offaly hurling team. Hello and you're welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for coming by. And you have strong golf connections too, your own daughter.
Yes, Patrice. Played for Ireland, played for what do you call it, as she says herself in the morning, that you're in places in... England, Ireland and Wales, only for me, she says you wouldn't be there.
Right.
So she plays off too.
She's played off too. Yeah. And yourself, did you play, Paddy?
I wouldn't be a good golfer either. I'd be all right. I'd be all right in the classic.
But aren't all hurlers naturally good golfers?
Natural swing, I suppose, to have that.
Yeah.
We play a lot of classics, that's all, in charity events now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go up on a wet Sunday morning at 6 o'clock to play a golf ball, I bet you.
Right.
It's a lonely sport, people don't realise.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you see for the people in what Shane done in the at the top table, but there's an awful lot of people down the line that no one here tells at all.
Yeah. I want to go back to 81, because when you think about it, for a relatively small county in the centre of Ireland, a couple of big towns, to win a hurling All-Ireland one year and a football the next, you know, was amazing, and on top of a lot of Leinster titles at both levels, you're picking from the same pool, more or less. Now, I was asking you earlier, did you play much football? You said not a lot. Sean played a little bit of hurling as well. But for such a small county to win two All-Irelands 2 years in a row, take me back to 81. We all talk about the Offaly in 82, but 81 was just as big from an Offaly sporting perspective, wasn't it, Paddy?
It just had a wonderful group of players came at the one time. Some very skillful players. And we had the mix through it as well. We were big down the middle. We were strong down the middle.
Mm.
And you had workers on it the morning that... It was a glory. In the late 70s, the morning that hurling and Offaly came massive. Like, there was 12,000 at a replay of a county final in 79 in Barr. In a replay.
And do they say that this town is kind of the dividing line? North is Tullamore's football and south is hurling. Is that right?
That's what they say, yeah.
Is it still the way?
No, they're Ballinamere now and what do you call it, down as far as you all have teams and Clara. Like, hurling's a novelty and everybody wants to play it because it's a skill sport.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that the stronger clubs in Offaly have weakened. The population have weakened in rural Offaly.
Yeah. Sean, we had your neighbour and school friend, PJ Cunningham, on a couple of weeks ago.
All right, yeah.
Talking about the ESB and Bord na Mon and how important they were, and that maybe without, you know, those two companies or businesses here, we wouldn't have had the sporting success. We mightn't have even had Shane Lowry, because Brendan might have gone off and emigrated or something because there wasn't the work around then.
That's for sure. But even I remember the first Offaly team in 1971 that won the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
Five of the first 15 worked for the ESB. So there's your answer. You know what I mean?
Was that the same with the hurling, Paddy?
Yes, most of them were all working in Brickett Factory and, you know, Bord na Mon and all them. They all got fitter jobs. They were all trained there. The population was kept at home. And I suppose that was a huge thing. That has deteriorated since now, because Dublin is the hub of it, and they're on the road from 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning to come back.
Yeah.
We that's working around home are blessed to be working around home.
Right. God, it was really a golden era, wasn't it, for the GA?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
We went nine Sundays to Croke Park and... Between the hurling and the football in 81 the morning, the footballers and the public all rolled behind it in Offaly. And again, the sandwiches, the tea, what you call it. It was a novelty that time.
Yeah, and it's going to be the same. Now, you moved to Mayo and you played with Mayo, of course, Sean, as well. You have the distinction.
For a couple of months, yeah.
You did.
85.
So you won it. Got to an All-Ireland final then in 85.
Oh, an All-Ireland semi-final.
Semi-final, that's right. Kevin McStay and John Finn and all those players. John Mahon.
Cracking goal in that kind
Willie
of
Joe Padden.
Willie Joe, how could we forget him? I met him a few weeks ago, and he, along with hundreds of thousands of Mayo people, are on their way to Dublin this evening. How is it going to go?
Well, my heart had loved Mayo. I'm just a little bit worried about the hard game Mayo had last weekend. And Dublin had a very soft game.
It's true.
And most of them were were rested, so they're going to be very, very fresh, whereas Mayo are trekking up the Ken from the, yeah, from the country.
So you go for Mayo and then, or I, Dublin?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not going for Dublin. I'd love to see Mayo.
Right.
But I think Mayo are actually the only team that's going to beat Dublin. And I think maybe that now is might be the chance for them that in a semi-final as against, yeah, the final. People forget that Dublin were only beaten, Mayo were only beaten by a point in two All-Irelands and a replay in another one.
Yeah, that's right.
And they scored 2-1 goals in one of them.
That's right. So, I remember being there.
That, like that everything, the... you'd say to yourself, you know, you want a bit of luck, and if yeah, they get a bit of luck, and maybe I'd love to see Dublin under pressure and see where they come from.
Well, we'll know by about 6 or half 6 this evening. Paddy, you people remember sang in the steps of the Hogan Stand after that win in 81. Was that prepared?
No, an accident. Yes, I tell you, I was prepared that we think we'd win the All-Ireland as well. We didn't think that either.
So the 81, you sang the Offaly Rover on the stand. Offaly's
sing a verse of it anyway. Probably you didn't sing it all as well.
Well, look, will you sing another verse for us now since we're in Tullamore?
I'll do that for you, no problem.
Good man, because we have Johnny Butterley. How are you, Johnny?
Worse
you have the squeeze box out and you're sitting here with these two men, and I know you're a great Offaly supporter as well. So look, we'll let you get wound up there. I just want to thank all the team here, to Eileen and to Mick and Damien and Sheila back at base in Dublin as well. Coming up after the news here on Radio 1 at 9 is Playback with Sinead Mooney. Thanks to all of our guests here in Tullamore. The show opens tomorrow morning, 8:30. Do come along, and particularly we'll hope that the weather is good for everybody. So until we talk to you at the same time next week, bye-bye from the Tullamore show. Thanks for listening. And to finish, it's the Offaly Rover, first time ever on national radio. It's Johnny Butterfield and Paddy Delaney.
A rover I have been, and a rover I must stay. Of a to the faithful county dear, I shall return some day. Oof, how I miss you, and your header sent there. Silently the peaceful Brosna calls your sons from far and near. All kin is he, I long to see where the woodbine is in bloom, and stroll the fields around for ban, hear the wild birds in full tune. At Clonmacnoise I kneel to pray, to Banagher I'll stray, and I'll drink and talk to fishermen of the ones that got away. Though dead or gone across the sea, are some friends I used to know. But I must pass Killotty, where Graceborn's men are laid low. Dear Crohan Hill, I'll see you still, where in childhood I played. Adieu to you, old Tullamore, I must be on my way.